Thank you very much, and I want to thank Club 20 for again sponsoring a great debate. Nicole and Bonnie and the volunteers last night serving food, that's really remarkable that we can bring together a community like this and talk about issues. I was saying about Johnny Vann years ago, there was a great saying when a small group of people started Club 20, and I always love this because I think about it often. It's that, Club 20's here partly to be able to distinguish between the quality of feed that is given to horses and the difference between that feed and what comes out the horse on the other end. That's what Club 20's done for a lot of years, is they're very good at identifying that. I don't know how many of you have been on the website of Club 20 lately, but it's a wonderful portrayal of the values that Club 20 stands for, and I think all of us can embrace those. The values are water, tourism, good government, agriculture, and quality of life. And, let's be straight here. Both Ray and I want to be elected to represent you. So the question that you might consider, if you take off your partisan hats for just a moment, vote for whoever you want at the end of it, but if you'll take off the partisan hats just for a moment, I honestly think that you're going to look at the qualifications of the two of us, and I believe I represent and can represent those values far better than Mr. Scott can in Denver. Why do I say that? Don't take my word for it. I invite you to review his record, and like Ronald Reagan said, don't be afraid of what you see. Take a look at his record and take a look at particularly what has he brought back to the Western Slope for us? I can answer that question for you, and he's not the best person qualified to represent us. The reason is because we can't have somebody over there who makes up numbers, first of all, whenever it's convenient. Secondly, we can't have somebody who insults the governor and expects to have any kind of respectful response from that administration. And folks, that's not, I don't know what kind of strategy that is. I mean, if you're going to negotiate to buy a horse or buy a car or anything, you're not going to get very far when you start out by insulting the person who you're negotiating with. And that's exactly what Ray's done, and I don't think it's served us well. Right now, there are serious issues for us here. There are very serious interests at stake. This isn't time for somebody to be representing us in Denver in a very partisan, ideological way that gets us nothing, and that's exactly what it's got us, nothing. So I'm proposing to you that I'm the representative who can go to Denver, I can negotiate with people, I can bring back the bacon for Western Colorado. We'll have a chance to talk in this debate more about the economics of what I'm saying, but I think that at the end of the day, I think you'll find that there's one person up on this stage who can represent us, and that's me.
Representative Scott, we're ready for your 3-minute opening remarks.
Thank you. And again, I'd like to thank everybody here from Club 20. It is so nice to see that you guys have put this together. And I kind of have to say, I kind of like the new digs. This is kind of a refreshing new look to be here at CMU, and I hope we continue this. This is very, very nice. And CMU is to be congratulated for doing an excellent job the last couple days. I think the way I would like to open this is basically by saying we still have a long road to go. We have gone through some very, very difficult economic times in the last few years, and it's a long trail for us to ride. We have passed a tremendous amount of good legislation, and we've blocked a tremendous amount of bad legislation. And the way we've done that is because we finally had a wall that the Democrats could not climb over, and it's called the majority. What we were able to do with the majority is we were able to stop a tremendous amount of bad legislation, which you've all had a chance to deal with, the Dirty Dozen, oil and gas regulation problems, and we have now built a mountain that they cannot climb. And I think it's very, very important as we go forward that we maintain and build that majority so that we can do the right things for Western Colorado. What we have right now is an Eastern Slope-based legislation group that's built from Democrats on the Eastern Slope. That is why Western Colorado is defined so much differently than the Eastern Slope. We're a different people. We're independent thinkers. We know how to get the job done. We know we don't have to depend on government. There's a tremendous difference between legislators here and legislators there. And you'll notice that as we go through different bills that we've worked on, water issues that we're very, very aware of, energy issues that are so important to the Western Slope, And at the same time, we are very, very wise to know that we must take care of the ones that can't take care of themselves. We protect K through 12 education, and we do the right thing because we get it. We fully, fully understand. Now, as far as I'm concerned, when you do your job as a legislator, you get challenged by the other party. And that's exactly what the case is here today. If you're up there fighting, getting the job done, you tend to upset the other side. So therefore, they put up a candidate against you. That's just how it works, folks. But I've done you a great job, and I look forward to your votes, and let's get on with it. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. We have two panelists here this afternoon, Ms. Penny Mitchell with Rocky Mountain PBS and Mr. Merrick Kinsey with Grand Junction Western Slope Industries, both from here in Grand Junction. Thank you all. We're going to have two questions that will come from each one of our panel members today. The first question will come from Ms. Mitchell and will be asked of Mr. Robinson, and then you will ask the same question of Representative Scott. And 1 minute for answering these questions. Excuse me.
What is your position on the recent Colorado SB 15, which allows undocumented students to be allowed to matriculate at standard tuition rates without proof of citizenship or legal status?
Well, I'm a member of the Colorado Mesa University Board. I'm a trustee here at the university. And our board voted a resolution, 9-0, supporting the asset bill, which is what you're describing. You know, more important, and this is sort of breaking news that you may not know or most people wouldn't know, a federal district court in Florida Friday announced a decision that made it illegal to charge undocumented students anything more than regular tuition. That just happened yesterday. And so now we have a judicial court, federal district court, that weighed in on this subject. So it's illegal to charge students more than regular tuition. So it's almost a matter of however I feel about it is not important. It's now the law of the land, and our board here at Mesa supported the asset bill.
Representative Scott, would you like the question repeated?
One more time, sure.
What is your position on the recent Colorado SB-15, which allows undocumented students to be allowed to matriculate at standard tuition rates without proof of citizenship or legal status?
Well, I think this goes right to the immigration issue as a whole. If you educate a student who is an illegal immigrant, okay, how do they get a job when they get out? They're not legal. So we have to figure out the problem before we start fooling around with solutions that don't make any sense. This is a huge problem nationwide. Illegal aliens are a problem, period. Right now, that's costing the state of Colorado $1.4 billion per year. Now, what does that have to do with higher education? We're missing the target. To ask them to, you know, for a child from Wyoming to want to come to Colorado and it cost him more to go to school at CMU than the illegal immigrant makes no sense to me. It's nonsensical when we have a bigger issue at play here. And I just don't understand how anybody could support that. It just makes no sense to me, especially in these economic times.
Mr. Robinson, you have 30 seconds
sure.
for a rebuttal.
You know, first of all, I'm going to point out to the audience here. See, here again, we hear an example, $1.4 billion. Ray just comes up with these numbers. Nobody's verified that number. And this is what I'm talking. We have to have credibility, folks, if we're going to have any reasonable discussion. Can't invent things and expect your point to be right. It's not about how we feel at this point. It's the law. It's been a court decision that's been made. Illegal immigrants cannot be charged more than regular students, and that's under the Equal Protection Clause of the Constitution. So you can quibble and talk all you want about, we got this big problem. The reality is, folks, we have a court decision that tells us what it is that we got to follow, Constitution.
It's time, sir. Mr. Kinsey, would you please state your question to Representative Scott first?
Okay. The new health care law, federal health care laws, is going to have a great deal of cost impact and reporting costs requirements on mid to small businesses and manufacturers, where healthcare is our biggest fixed cost in most businesses these days. How can the state help minimize these costs so we're still able to offer healthcare to our valued employees and yet be able to afford to grow our businesses?
The huge problem we have here is what we're talking about is called Obamacare. Okay? There was a report that was just released this morning that was in the Denver Post about a $750 billion waste study that shows we're wasting $750 billion a year on health care as it stands today. We don't need Obamacare. What we need is control of the health system as it is and get rid of waste. Waste, waste. It's proven over and over again that that is the critical problem. If we can get that under control and quit having paperwork issues that don't make any sense. I've got the article right here, actually. If there was inefficient delivery of care, it was $30 billion a year. Excess administration costs, $190 billion a year. Inflated prices, $150 billion a year. Prevention failures, $65 billion a year. Fraud, $75 billion a year. We don't need Obamacare. We need control.
Mr. Robinson, would you like the question restated?
I think I get it as the issue about health care and the cost. What can Colorado do? First of all, it's what's been proposed as a countermeasure to the Affordable Health Care Act is that we let states, through inter-party lines, sell insurance. I've had several people say that. The problem with that whole concept, and Ray is a supporter of that, is that we end up developing Colorado regulations that have to be followed in Colorado to bill people. I don't disagree that fraud, for example, of course we got to crack down on fraud. Do we have to crack down on administrative costs? Of course. But where is the waste in the entire healthcare system? Sure, we got to focus on that. But it's not about delivering services to people. Healthcare is something we all need. There's nobody in this room who, if you have an appendicitis right now, don't want health care right now. That's just the reality of the world in which we live. Can we do better? Absolutely. And should we do better? Yes. We can, in the legislature, all sorts of measures we can take to make streamline the affordability of health care where the profits are going right now, pharmaceuticals and insurance companies. That's where we see it.
Representative Scott, you have a 30-second rebuttal.
Well, just to talk about Colorado in particular, since Mr. Robinson doesn't believe there's any actual numbers, this is the budget from Colorado. Last year alone was $50,569,906 spent on emergency care for non-citizens. The prior year was $75,541,134. There are numbers. They are documented. It is a problem.
Ms. Mitchell, if you would ask your question of Representative Scott first.
Reports developed through the DU Strategic Issues Panel indicate that Colorado's budget issues are so dire that we cannot grow our way out of budget shortfalls. How would you address the budget concerns Colorado is facing?
Well, that's kind of comical because that's what I brought with me was the budget because it's such an important issue and that we all have to focus on. And once you get into the legislature, you understand that. You don't just jabber about it. You have to read this. It makes a lot of sense when you get involved. So what you find is that the study that you're talking about from DU is very, very eye-opening. Now, opponents on the other side of the aisle are saying Tabor must go, must raise taxes. No. There's a lot of proof out there. We do not need to mess with Tabor. Tabor keeps us in line. We have constitutional amendments that keep us in line. We must have a balanced budget in the state of Colorado, thank goodness. Or we could be just like California. I think what we have to look at is long-term and say, okay, just for a quick example, there's $9.4 billion worth of assets in the state of Colorado. Now, that's everything from the state capitol building to state buildings to snow plows to you name it, it's out there. We need to have some form of system that looks at that and says, okay, how much of that do we really need? How much of that can we cut back? How much can we sell to the private sector? And put that money back into a rainy day fund and then also cut the size of government.
Mr. Robinson, would you like the question restated?
Sure. I don't have a lot of sharp disagreement about Ray's answer. However, I mean, he did propose earlier, let's sell all the state lands, put them in a trust fund, and then get the interest. I mean, come on. That's the kind of irresponsible, off-the-wall kind of proposal that isn't going to solve the problem. I guess the follow-up question is, what have you done about any of this, Ray? The legislation, and I invite you again to review his record, all these problems, we've gotten so good at describing and articulating the problem, but nobody's spending any energy on solutions. So, sure, we can recognize it as a problem, but let's start working on what the solution is.
Representative Scott, you have a 30-second rebuttal.
To what?
No rebuttal.
All right.
Not to that.
We will go to Mr. Kinsey, and if you would please pose your question to Mr. Robinson.
Yes, right now, as you know, bank loans for small businesses are very hard to obtain, certainly at reasonable rates. The mortgage interest rate is a record low. Business borrowing rates are about a 6% gap between the federal discount window and business borrowing rates in best case. What do you see as a solution to credit crunch? What can the state do to assist small businesses in obtaining credit to continue to operate and grow?
A very good question, and I proposed one concept is that currently the legislature meets for 120 days. I would like to see us reduce that time to 90 days. That would save us close to $1.24 million and also might save us some of the terrible ideas that come out of there and a lot of the political theater that we see over there. If we could reduce it to 90 days, a lot of states have gone to 30 days. Colorado used to be every other year. I would take that money, the savings from reducing the political theater for that 1 month, and use it to introduce $100,000 loans, microloans, into the highest hit counties by unemployment, and allow small businesses, these ideas come from small businesses, okay, this isn't my idea, they would like microloans, a microbank that could lend them money at 2% for those instant emergencies that they cannot anticipate. So it's one idea, okay? It's a way of starting to address on-the-ground reality that small businesses want and need.
Representative Scott, would you like the question restated?
No, I think I've got it. Mr. Robinson doesn't have an understanding of the legislature, obviously, or the Constitution of Colorado. In the Constitution, it says we can meet for 120 days or less. It is not about that. We would have to change the Constitution. What it's about is the number of bills that are run. And what we do is we need to run a joint resolution between the House and the Senate to reduce those number of bills. It's a House rule. That's all it is. Now, we've run that 2 years in a row, and the Democrats have killed it. So I'm not exactly sure who he's going to caucus with to get this straightened out, but that's somewhat of a problem. If you did do the math on what he's talking about, with over 100,000 small businesses in the state of Colorado, they're going to get about $140 a pop. I guess they can go buy lunch. The second problem with that is across the Capitol, it does not say First National Bank of the state of Colorado. We can't loan money. We can't put up the full faith and credit of the state of Colorado without a constitutional change.
Mr. Robinson, you have a 30-second rebuttal.
Well, of course. It's what I said, if you were listening, is that I said the top 10 counties that are hurt most by unemployment. It's a way of designating and using that money. And it's interesting, we see the same political sort of windbag approach to this. Oh, it's too complicated. We can't do it. It's too difficult. We've tried it. You know, that kind of defeatist thinking is exactly why our legislature cannot get moving forward. And as far as caucusing, I'll caucus with anybody, any party, to do things right over there. Nonpartisan. I don't care if it's Republican, Democrat idea. If it's a good idea, bring it back.